So, good morning, everyone. Today we are going to see the last unit. It is a very dense unit, and I think it concentrates most of the knowledge about this course. So I assume it is a bit overwhelming for you, but the idea is that you have a general idea of the difference between the different knowledge networks, what type of language they use, etc. So this is basically the practical part of everything we have seen before. Well, also unit 4, it was also a practical application. So what are we going to see today? We are going to basically see the difference between the lexical products. We saw in unit four, we also saw what a thesaurus is, what the terminology. Today we are going to focus especially on ontologies. There is here a link in the PowerPoint that you can download. You will have an access to this PDF. If it doesn't work, the link, you can just copy the information and navigate and find the reading. This is a recommended reading for this topic, the differences between these lexical products. They are called lexical products because they deal with the lexicon. Everything that has to do with language, especially lexicon words, are considered lexical products. And today, all artificial intelligence technologies, even chat GPT, is a lexical product. So the role of linguistics nowadays is more important than ever. We will see various definitions of ontologies, so what they are from different perspectives, and then we will see also that they are interrelated. It can depend on the purpose of the definition, on the purpose of later on the ontology, but they are very interrelated. Some of them are even compatible or complementary. Okay, so, and we will also see different types of ontologies that are available nowadays, although there are hundreds of ontologies nowadays. So the most important would be standardization. This is the most important. Otherwise, we have, I'm just trying to see if, good morning, Israel. So now we are going to continue first. Well, I just said what the objectives of this session are. Now we are going to go. We start already with the introduction. If you have any doubts, you can ask or afterwards or now while I am speaking, okay? I will read the chat at the same time. The introduction is very simple. In the same vein that the very word language means a different thing in computer programming or in semantics or linguistics, the word ontology means a different thing depending on the background, whether it is computer programming or whether it is philosophical background or even mathematical background. In computer programming, a language is only a markup language, such as HTML or DAML. An ontology in computer programming is the main concepts that are handled in an area of knowledge or in a database. So the main concepts in a database are called an ontology. In fact, in our university in UNED, there is a research group in the Faculty of Computing and Engineering, La Facultad de Informática y Sistemas Informáticos, led by Salvador Ross, who is a professor in this university, who have had for many years still going on project for an ontology on poetry. And he's a computer technician. He doesn't know anything about linguistic theory, and however, he is designing an ontology. Nowadays, the best would be to establish more relationship between linguists and programmers, computer programmers, to find some common point. There are, but we still are working, let's say, in parallel. And we would say efforts if we started to work more together. The introduction also says that it's taken from the book, as you see. For concepts to be transmitted, we need words, and this is why it is important to always keep in mind the difference between concepts and words. This is some introduction theory that is very basic, but this is what we need to reflect upon. The difference between a concept and a word, because we saw already in previous units that we can have an approach to language through concepts, putting concept first, or to words. When we approach language through the concepts that that words contain or express, we enter in the world of ontologies. When we enter the handling of knowledge through words, and specific knowledge words such as terms, which are specific domain words, then we enter in the world of terminologies. And we saw in previous units that these ontologies and terminologies, sometimes they can work together or they can be interrelated. But it is a different way of creating knowledge. They have different approaches. The semasiological approach or the onomasiological approach, as we saw. What is a knowledge network? Well, now we are going to see in this point different definitions for an ontology. If you find this question in the exam, what are the different definitions of ontologies? You could make a summary, because it's a very long part, but it is also very important, because ontologies are something that many that has provoked the interest not only of linguists but also of mathematicians, computer technicians, knowledge management, enterprises, now for instance with ChatGPT, etc. So what is an ontology? First, a knowledge network, in as general as this. So it is a collection of concepts that structure information. So these concepts are structured. This means that they are organized, and then there has to be an interface to allow the user to view this information. How is this information structured? Through hierarchies or taxonomies. These concepts are organized into hierarchies. A hierarchy, as you know, includes super concepts or sub concepts. General concepts, specific concepts. So this is a hierarchy, but there are other ways to structure information. We will see now taxonomies, metonymies, etc. And a definition of the editor of the web ontology language, Heflin, is here. An ontology defines the terms used to describe and represent an area of knowledge. Ontologies are used by people, databases, and applications that need to share domain information. Domain means a subject area, a specific area of knowledge. And ontologies include computer usable definitions. So this means that an ontology needs to include some language. Yes, a hierarchy can consist of hyperonymy or an hyponymy. Homonymy is also a kind of knowledge organization. But the hierarchy, as you know, it would be more superior concepts. In this case, I think the most adequate would be to consider this in terms of hyponymy and hyperonymy, higher concepts or general concepts and specific concepts. This is one way of organizing concepts, but there are other ways. This also is the way we organize terminologies. Terminologies include hyperonymy and hyponymy. In general, we need to organize concepts, right? And we need to organize knowledge. Our mind needs to categorize and start structure categories. So in an ontology, the approach is the concept. We organize the concepts, and then we try to give them, as it says here, computer usable definitions. This means that we need to give the computer certain meta language that helps the computer understand the part in the hierarchy or in the structure that the basic concept or the complex concept occupies. So You will see when you are investigating, we will see today about ontologies, that we need to use a very, at the beginning, it looks very complex because it's absolutely a complete different language. It is a meta language with different tags and codes that help categorize these concepts into a class, a type of, it belongs to the class of, for instance, a cat is a type of animal. It belongs to the class of animals. Animals belong to the class of living beings, for instance. This is a very simple example. So ontologies encode knowledge. This is encoding, okay? Creating codes to identify this knowledge, to represent this knowledge. And this is a way to make knowledge reusable. So the main objective of ontologies is to be able to organize knowledge in a way that is retrievable through computer technologies and that can help different applications. For instance, data management, knowledge management, artificial intelligence, chatbots, direct translation, retrieve knowledge means always this. So how do we retrieve knowledge directly? It is a very simple example would be, I want to organize my t-shirts in colors, or I want to organize my t-shirts into whether I use them during the week or for the weekend or for a wedding, if I will use a more formal dress. So I will organize my wardrobe into categories. That helped me later on. Imagine I put tags to these categories. Imagine I have a super giant vestidor, which I don't. But imagine I am a millionaire and I have a vestidor, a dressing room that is as big as a whole living room, an average Spanish living room. And then I close everything under a wardrobe with doors because I don't want my clothes to get the dust. And then in every wardrobe, I put a tag. And in this tag, I say, oh, white t-shirts. I organize first by type of clothes, formal, informal. Then whether they are a dress or whether they are jeans, and then the color and the type of fabric, etc. And I put tags everywhere. And these tags, maybe I decide that instead of using my language, I want everybody to understand this language, and I use symbols that I have agreed with others that will work. And instead of writing in Spanish, rojo, verde, amarillo, lana, invierno, verano, I use a meta language, some symbols that will help everybody that goes to that room quickly identify a specific type of clothing. So this would be an ontology with a very everyday example, okay? A very simple example. So this is just to help understand, because I know ontologies have caused some difficulties this year. So this is a very simple example of understanding, for helping understanding what an ontology can be, but of course in a much more complex way. What can be ontologies can also be considered artifacts with different degrees of structure. A structure is always part of an ontology. So we can focus on this, on the idea of a structure. Here, with this application, I cannot click on the link, but I have included the link here, and you have it on the PowerPoint that you can download. Structures can be taxonomies, and a very interesting one is the Yahoo hierarchy. And this is a web page to its explanation of how they arrange concepts, what they use it for, etc. They can be metadata schemes such as the Dublin Core. Here I have copy-pasted some text of the Dublin Core, but I highly recommend you go on this link to see what the Dublin Core is. The Dublin Core was an initiative already in the 90s, I think, or beginning of the 21st century, in order to try to standardize the use of knowledge, the handling of knowledges. And then that it is called the Dublin Core Metadata Initiative. This metadata is all this language or all this data that we use, meta-language, metadata, to organize language itself. And they proposed terms that organize all this data into properties, classes, data types, vocabulary encoding schemes. So this initiative, the Dublin Core, now has an update document. Their last updated document is from 2020. And, well, you can see here what they say about themselves. It is very interesting. They say that these terms, all these dozen terms, are intended to be used in combination with metadata terms from other compatible vocabularies in the context of application profiles. This looks very complicated, but it's just, of course, at the beginning, it's overwhelming. Also, for me, it is, because you have a text full of acronyms and abbreviations. In the end, it is everything that has been done around the world with proposals for different types of languages that help handle knowledge. You have the language of this meta language that goes behind, for instance, in a web page. A web page, this Java language, for instance, or when we want to put tags, tagging on the for the navigation of through knowledge in web page or in the internet, there are different types of languages that are used that will help us later on, for instance, to Google or to Yahoo or different search engines to retrieve data. Okay, and this they proposed to standardize this. Because what happened in the world that with the beginning, especially this comes from before the internet, but with the internet, it became huge. Many centers, research centers, many universities started like crazy to develop ontologies, lexical databases, because they saw the potential of the internet for handling knowledge. What happens that suddenly they had several proposals all over the world at the same time. And if this is not understandable by the same type of software or machine, which has the same properties, then it's a bit useless in a way, because in the same way that there is a standard for the meters, for electricity, for understanding kilobytes, etc., we need some standards to handle knowledge. And there were some initiatives, and one of them is this famous Dublin Core initiative. Uniform Resource Identifier, for instance, is a global identifier usable in NIC data. This appears all in yellow, but this is some error of the interface, because the only thing I wanted to mark in green was this RDF, Resource Description Framework Schemas. This Resource Description Framework here, this is underlined, will give you a link to another description. You can search easily if you want to understand what these schemas are, etc. You can go on Wikipedia, because it gives a very interesting definition of very simple, let's say understandable, of what these schemas are. But you see a lot of acronyms, as I say. These resource description framework schemas are, in the end, a lot of metadata and a lot of meta-language resources, as I say, to handle knowledge and to categorize concepts into classes, type, properties, etc., from very specific concepts to very general concepts, and with also relationships of synonymy, hyperonymy, hyponymy, antonymy, and all kinds of semantic relations, okay? You can investigate more if you go to the Wikipedia webpage RDF schema, Wikipedia, you will see the definition and you will see examples on how they are used. And then you can see a bit of the internal structure of an ontology. Because one thing is to see the interface of the ontology, and the other thing is to see how to create an ontology, the type of language that needs to be used. It is the same as when we write in Java language, and then the interface what we see on a web page, right? But we can also go and click on the right button of our mouse and see the language that is behind. So this is more or less the same, but for ontologies. Ontologies are also considered logical theories, or that have to do with logical theories, and this stems from set theory, from mathematics. In the PowerPoint, which I don't know why here doesn't appear correctly, there is a link to a PDF about set theory, about mathematics. It's related to mathematics, but it so that you can take an overview on what it comes from and how, because this discipline has helped and philosophy and mathematics have had a big influence on the use of meta-language for linguistics, okay? Because the theoretical basis comes earlier in philosophy and in mathematics than in linguistics. You know, linguistics is a much more recent discipline that has taken from that. Mathematics, in the end, is also a type of language. Computing is also a type of language. And let's say that the language used in mathematics, the meta language, is much older. So that's why logic is very helpful also for linguistics, and it's taken from mathematics in linguistics. So that's why ontologies can also be considered a logic-based language. The most important in logics is that it identifies classes, properties, and relations. So basically, an ontology is a set of concepts that are distinguished by class, property, and the relationship. This would be the easiest definition. Heffin also points out that ontologies figure prominently in the semantic web as a way of representing the semantics of documents. So the semantic web is composed of ontologies, basically. And because ontologies are the way of structuring and defining the meaning of metadata terms, okay? Ontologies are, as I said, this meta language that helps identify the concepts and retrieve them. Sowa in 2001, already 20 years ago, said that the subject of an ontology and ontologies also in philosophy have been defined much earlier than in linguistics. He says that it is the study of the categories of things that exist or may exist in some domain. So an ontology in this case, the perspective is analyzing an ontology through not from the practical point of view, but from the theoretical point of view, studying. So this could be the theoretical approach to ontologies, okay? So for him, the product of such a study called an ontology is the catalog of the types of things that are assumed to exist in a domain of interest, which is called D, from the perspective of a person who uses a language L, for the purpose of talking about X. So this would be more a philosophical definition of an ontology, okay? Ben Guarino said that it is a set of logical axioms. So here we have very important, again, the idea of logic designed to account for the intended meaning of a vocabulary. And De Grote, Karin De Grote, points out that the definition as an agreed, conventionalized, conceptualization, so ontologies have to do with conceptualizations of a reality based on, and again we have important. Classes, relations, and then functions. Here it she adds axioms and instances. That's why she says that normally an ontology comprises a thesaurus, which in turn comprises a taxonomy, because a taxonomy is a hierarchy. It's a hierarchy classification of a part of reality. A thesaurus and a taxonomy is also included in a terminology, as we saw in the previous unit. The difference, as we saw, is the approach to this type of knowledge, semasiological or onomasiological. This is from Stanford University. Stanford University defined protégé, designed protégé, and also protégé is a way, is a software to make ontologies, to create your own ontology. And then they have in this document that you have the link where you have the link here. You can click on it. You have the definition of an ontology and also an interesting description of the details of the language that an ontology uses, etc. So for them, basically they say that an ontology defines the common vocabulary and information that we use in a specific domain. And it is important. It includes machine interpretable definitions. So I'm a bit repeating it the same as you can see once and again. It has to be machine readable, it has to include relations, and it has to belong to a specific domain. So why do we develop an ontology? What are the uses of an ontology? We can analyze domain knowledge, we can separate domain knowledge from the operational knowledge, we can make domain assumptions, we can enable your reuse of domain knowledge, we can share common understanding. This is all a way of handling knowledge through data, okay? Instead of using a deductive method, we can use an inductive method. There we have the data, and then with the data and the ontology, we can make assumptions and continue handling knowledge for very practical things and also for theoretical or philosophical aspects. In conclusion, there are three elements that have always to be included in an ontology: classes, relationships, and properties. Okay? And this is a very interesting video from an Indian scholar who in 15 minutes records how he creates an ontology in Protégé. Protégé is this software developed by the Stanford University that helps everybody create their own ontology. So you can put it into practice. I encourage you to click on it and see if you have time. Now we are going to talk about databases and the difference between a database, a terminology, and an ontology. Although we have seen already a bit of the differences between terminologies and ontologies. For the databases, we have a very important example in the area of semantics, which is the largest lexical database of English nowadays is WordNet. WordNet is developed by Princeton University, and this it appears in their webpage. Yeah, I really recommend you to go and navigate through WordNet. It includes software that is also available for download that you can put into practice. WordNet plays with the lexical items. Lexical items, as you know, are nouns, verbs, adjectives, and adverbs, and they are grouped into sets of cognitive synonyms, which are called by them synsets, each expressing a distinct concept. So they organize concepts into synonyms, and they link them, interlink them by means of conceptual, semantic, and lexical relations. So they say, well, it looks like a thesaurus because, you know, a thesaurus organizes terms in terms, valga la redundancia, of their synonymy and antonymy, especially synonymy relationships. But the difference is that it groups words together based on their meanings, but in the same way as thesaurus, but there are some important distinctions. that Burnet interlinks not just word forms as a thesaurus, because a thesaurus in this sense would have more it would have a more semasiological approach as terminologies, because it goes from the form to the strings of letters to the concept, but in WordNet, it is more an onomasiol. It combines with an onomasiological approach, so it identifies words that are also close and not are exact. So it identifies close synonymy and not only synonymy, pure synonymy. So it helps disambiguation, and it also establishes other semantic relations among words. Okay, so. It has more a lexicological approach, onomasiological approach. It is a combination. So the structure is that the words, the relations, relation among words is still synonymy, and they are called synsets in this case, and they contain all this amount of synsets, 117,000. Synsets, but they are linked to each other through a number of conceptual relationships. And every synset, so these groups of synonyms, contain a gloss. A gloss for them is a brief definition. So there are short sentences that illustrate the use of these synset members. It says also that word forms with several distinct meanings are represented in as many distinct synsets. This means that each form meaning pair in WordNet is unique. Okay. This is an example. This is taken from their webpage. You can see here that it is publicly available for download. So I encourage you to go navigate and see. This would be for databases. We gave the most easy and clear and famous example all over the world. And then we have terminologies, which we saw a bit on the previous, in the previous unit. Terminologies are related to expert domains, so they are specific languages for specific purposes. They contain ontologies that are restricted in a field of knowledge, but as I said, the approach is different from ontologies, because they approach from the form, from the word forms. They are sense-based, and they differ from dictionaries. Here in the PowerPoint, there is a symbol of an equal, you know, because they are different from dictionaries, because in dictionaries, the list of words are established where synonyms are scattered through the dictionary, and what is grouped together, as you know, is polysemous words and homonyms. These are the ones that are grouped together. But in terminologies, the organization of these terms and of these words is based on sense. So synonyms are grouped together. Okay. So this is the main principle of terminological work that distinguishes it from dictionaries. And now we are going to see also ontologies. We have seen before in the previous unit, because as I said, this is the most important part of the most important part of this last unit is to deal with ontologies themselves. Nirenberg and Ruskin already in 2004 proposed several applications of semantics: machine translation, information extraction, question answering. Before, they didn't know what the still chatbots were, but here we have that chatbots, answering, text summarization. Answering would be more what the chatbot is nowadays. The same types of applications that computational dictionaries offer, and a bit more, I would say. However, when these applications are based on an ontological approach to meaning, any kind of input to the system has to undergo various stages of analysis, such as tokenization, parsing, we saw this before, all these different labels and metadata that we have to add in order to include the concept and put it on the right place in the hierarchy, okay? So all these stages are what the process are what the what is called the process of text meaning representation. So the we generate an input for specialized processing. Examples of their use in machine translation. Text meaning representation needs to be translated into a natural language different from the one in which the input was supplied. So the program does this task, what is usually called a text generator. And in information extraction, text meaning representations are used by the special rules as sources of filler of the user's query. So this would be the question answering processor, who first needs to understand what the user wants, the objectives of the user, then find the necessary information with background word knowledge, which now it continues growing and growing. Imagine in ChatGPT, this background word knowledge that is being used by ChatGPT improves itself. You ask the question the day after, and the system has already used its own resources, and the algorithms that have been produced during these 24 hours or 5 hours by all over the world to give better answers. And imagine how in amazing it is that depending on the user, the answer and the information that is retrieved changes. So this means that they also use the algorithms that are stored in the navigation of this person. So the data this person has shared with the internet, our digital imprint. That's why nowadays it is so scary, but it's unstoppable, I think. Although there are some countries, I don't know which ones, but I know that there are some countries that have censored, that chat have forbidden ChatGPT, because it's a way also of obtaining information from the users. And of you, and the, this information is used not only for the user, but also for other users to improve the, to sell, to improve itself. A reflection about ontologies and language. Shelley and Safarer says that the comparison of languages relies on those concepts which are essentially the same across human minds. So these are the universal concepts, cultures and languages, in which therefore can be activated through the use of any human language. And these instances of mental universals join other common, less common concepts, which are called idiosyncratic concepts, to constitute a complex structure in our mind. So we develop a network of cross-connected conceptualizations of the phenomena that make up our world. And this is what they label as an ontology, our own system of conceptualizations. So this is also a philosophical thinking, a philosophical reflection of what an ontology is. Okay? You can agree or not when it comes to philosophy, but it's a quite interesting definition. The concept of ontological status is has to do with the position a concept holds within a given ontology. So a concept holds an ontological status, and this status is determined by the ontological relations these concepts have with each other in the same system. And this is what is called their status of a concept. Metzinger and Galés in 2007, they even go further and they say that to have an ontology is to interpret the world. So in a way, it's a way of interpreting the world. In fact, the brain, they view the brain as a representational system which is aimed at interpreting the world. And they consider the brain to have to be the first software that possesses an ontology, because we automatically and unconsciously create assumptions and create primitives and create generalizations of concepts, etc. And it is interesting to see that they point out that there is empirical evidence, because there has been neurological studies, and they have analyzed how the brain works. And there is empirical evidence that shows that the brain models movements and action goals in terms of multimodal representations of organism-object relations. What is the same as saying that we are a type of software? So we have a software, which is our brain. We could consider our brain maybe a hardware more than a software. And let's say that we have ended up reproducing our own hardware into a computer. That's why many people think that machines one day will surpass us, because we are software itself. We are very similar to machines in this way. Nirenberg and Raskin also point at something interesting, which is that ambiguity is what distinguishes natural language and ontologies. In ontological semantics, which is a type, an area of semantics which deals with ontologies, polysemy is the mapping of one lexical entry to two separate concepts, okay? But in an ontology, polysemous terms will be part of a different section in the ontology where concepts are built. Well, language is used by people, ontologies, both as constructed for computers or as a philosophical discipline, they are made ad hoc. Which this reflection from the book means that ontologies can be created ad hoc. Ad hoc means for computers to be understandable by computers, and they have also this philosophical origin or philosophical. They belong to the philosophical discipline. Here we have seen many philosophical definitions of an ontology. So ontologies are both the reflection of what an ontology is and how it works, and the practical application and implementation of these ontologies to be understandable by computers, okay, and to be used by everyday lay people nowadays. The use of a metalanguage. In the book, we have an example taken from our rector, Mairal, and Perignan Pascual already in 2010, because they developed an ontological conceptual representation language. Now, with his many obligations, he is a bit out of this world, but Professor Ricardo Mairal has been one of the main reference in our country for, first, the development of a linguistic model called the lexical construction model, which improves the functional model of Dick and Van Belin, the Roland reference grammar model. And finally, when he started working with Perignan Pascual, who is also a computer technician, they had several projects where they developed several metalanguages to be implemented in Corel, which was a database where they wanted to create a multilingual, universal ontology for cultural concepts. And these are the thematic frames they proposed. This is just an example of what a metalanguage is. This thematic frame included a theme, a referent, meaning postulates, a goal, etc. So the events they wanted to represent was answer. And this would be, in their Corel representation language, the frame that they call thematic frame for answer. Okay, so the event answer belongs in turn to the higher frame of the meta-concept communication, to which the meta-conceptual unit is assigned to a prototypical thematic frame. So it is quite complex. They had several people working for it, and they did quite a very interesting things. But especially it helped to help us understand how to develop an ontology, the implications it has, etc. Nowadays we have, as I said, Protégé, which doesn't have this, let's say, philosophical background and theoretical basis, because Ricardo Mayral comes from having a solid linguistic background, and this can help justify the categorization of concepts in one place or another, or the use of the different parsers and taggers. If we develop an ontology ourselves, lay people, we open protégé, and they say, "Oh, let's learn how to use protégé," but then there is no theoretical background on what, for instance, the verb say is or what answer is, we can include any kind of tagging, right? So they wanted to provide, the framework of knowledge that would be necessary to categorize concepts in one way or another, and also to make it universal, which for me was very complex. Because in the end, you cannot help using metalanguage that is based on English. So this is the complex part. In any case, they also used numbers and symbols, but they also used natural language as metalanguage, which has always been the tricky part in linguistics. Here you have the designing of an ontology by a computer technician from this university. This was a PhD student from Salvador Ros, as I told you before. And one day he gave us an example of how they were developing in a meeting in Teams, how they were developing their ontology with just the knowledge, the categorizations, the how to tag the different knowledge, how to organize relations, and here you can see that it has objectives. It has also alto nivel, high level objective, low level objective. What do I need to know? So depending on the ontology, this was made because Salvador Ros, Professor Salvador Ros, and me are the supervisors of a PhD, a very brilliant super PhD student, which is Laura López Ramírez, who is designing nowadays an ontology for educational purposes. And what Omar was trying to teach her and explain to her was how to, first, we have to define our objectives and conceptualize them, see what she was the ontology for, and then how to put this into a language that the computer can understand. So this would be in the case of identifying ontologies as Peace, Schale, and Safferner define them, a domain-specific ontology, because her ontology could be a very specific with very specific concepts which are related to learning paths in the university. Open ontologies, here you have some examples, and they cover general concepts, so it means that they are much larger, and I just recommend you to go on the web and check them, and then you can see examples of ontologies. What are the principles of ontologies then, to closing up already, just to finish? They are language independent. They are axioms, so they are well-formed. They have axiomatic specifications. They have a similarity principle. So a child must share the meaning of a parent. It means that they have shared meaning. They abide by the specificity principle. This means a child must differ from his parents in an instinctive way. That is necessary and a sufficient condition for being the child. So they include specific concepts that distinguish from other concepts that are similar in, for instance, a family. A family is parents, children. Okay, so this would be they belong, they share the meaning of family, but the child is different from the father, for instance. And the opposition principle is, for instance, the distinguishing between a pair of siblings, like primogénito, hermano segundo, etc. So, artificial intelligence, which is the main topic nowadays with ChatGPT, focuses on the computational reasoning about using ontological knowledge, so on the computationally intelligent acquisition and revision of new knowledge. So artificial intelligence relies on ontologies, ontologies rely on artificial intelligence. This would be the, in other words, expressed like this. Knowledge bases, just to finish. Knowledge bases and ontologies are close. The first one, knowledge bases, are collections of facts and rules, and they have inference procedures to create these rules. But an ontology is considered a broader term, because they can also include the knowledge base for use. And here you have some links to that I recommend you to read for different language tools, okay? And further recommended readings, what is an ontology? Here you have the three main important readings that I would recommend. An introduction to ontologies is in this other paper. Here you have also the link to the project of, as I said, the professor in UNED, Salvador Ross. This is their research group. If you are interested, you can see what they have done. Very interesting. And I also recommend these conferences that we have just recently had. One given by the author of this chapter, Margarita Godet, who is retiring finally at the age of 74 this year. And we organized a seminar in a master where she works also. She has, as you have probably seen in this chapter, she loves to philosophize about these things, and she mixes constantly concepts of philosophy with linguistics, etc. So her last talk is in Spanish and deals with this, what the interchange and the connection between language technologies and linguistics and philosophy. So I really recommend you watch it. We also did a roundtable where a big professor, a big academic of this country, which is Paco Ruiz de Mendoza, Francisco Ruiz de Mendoza, who was also a teacher of mine in the University of La Rioja. He's famous for being one of the main linguists working with in the past with cognitive linguistics. Later on, he started working together with Ricardo Mayral on the development of the lexical construction model, and they have worked together also in the development of Corel, etc. So these two big, Ricardo Mayral was also present in the conference, in this Mesa Redonda, and there was just a conversation among scholars, among very big scholars of this country, reflecting upon the nowadays situation of what is the position of linguistics nowadays as regards the digital era and the knowledge era. Because I don't know if you know, but the government has proposed in the last regulations, there is a proyecto de ley or anteproyecto or something like this, that has been a scandal, is considered a scandalous for the Societas Linguistica Europea. So the European Association of Linguistics has called our Spanish government, the attention of our Spanish government, because they want to remove linguistics as a discipline from the curriculum and from what is considered in Spain a discipline. So I have no words for this. Well, this can be framed within these this type of reflections that nowadays, as linguists, we all have. Because the overwhelming evolution of computer technologies, of languages, leaves linguistics in a very strange position, because linguistics is not needed anymore in itself, the theory, but it's there. It's like when they, in the curriculum, they want to remove philosophy from the curriculum of educational, because what is philosophy for? Philosophy is the basis of ethics, is the basics of human understanding and knowledge. Is my at least what I think. So to try to not teach philosophy to children, stealing from them their opportunity to use their brain, basically to help them understand how our brain works, and to observe their brain and observe reality in many different perspectives is, well, I am going too far in my reflections, but let's say that nowadays there is a debate on the paper of linguistics, the role of linguistics in the development of knowledge, the handling of knowledge, artificial intelligence networks, etc., etc., etc. And this is just a very interesting roundtable where we were talking about these things, okay? And, well, this is everything for today. Thank you for standing this, for resisting to here. I don't know if you have any questions or any views, opinions, anything you want to comment. Otherwise, we will. I will read you in the forum, and I wish you a lot of good luck for the exams.